You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 18th of January 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we're in a bit of a lull at the moment with the news, sort of like a calm before the storm, I think, with Biden's crowning, the alleged president-elect's alleged inauguration happening on Wednesday. As I predicted, COVID is already being used as an excuse for why there are not going to be anybody there. In actual fact, he's told people not to come. Isn't that convenient for him? He knows that there would be nobody there. He has no support. So he preempts that by suggesting people stay at home because of COVID. And he fills the place up with thousands of armed infantry men instead. Is that what a democracy looks like? Loads of military there to cover up the fact that there are no people there to cheer on the inauguration of the new president? Well, we'll have to wait and see what happens on Wednesday. Obviously, I advise everybody to just stay away, be peaceful, be calm, be law-abiding, and wait to see what happens. So since there's no news to really talk about because of this, I thought we'd talk about some other subjects. Now, I was getting into some conversations over the weekend about aiming for political power. And this is something that people that are fairly new to the movement, they realise what's going on. They realise that white people are being replaced. They realise we're being discriminated against in every possible way. We have all these laws that are there to prevent us from identifying the problems that we face. And they think, well, what we have to do is we have to take power. We need a political party and we need to take power and then we can change all of this. Well, yeah, that would be great if we could get a political party into power and change all of this. But the fact is, we are living with the results of our own actions, the consequences of our own actions. We're living with the consequences of going to war against Germany 80 years ago. Germany tried to liberate the country and tried to create a state that did what was best for the German people. They weren't interested in other people. They were just interested in the German people. Hence, the Jews were not required in that state because the Jews are not of German heritage. So we went to war against Germany, and since then we have created multicultural states, and we've created laws in an attempt to prevent anything like that from happening again. And that's just the consequences of the Second World War. So we have to really live with those consequences and learn to adapt to them. Anytime we try to get a political party into power, they face insurmountable odds. You only have to look at what happened to the British National Party to see that. They had some minor successes. They managed to get councillors in London. And what was the result of that? Well, the Labour Party imported masses of foreigners into that part of London to ensure that the BNP would never get voted in again. So the BNP ended up losing their seat because the electorate was swapped for another electorate that was predisposed to voting for Labour. And again, this is what we see happening in America at the moment. We see Biden saying he wants to open up the borders. He wants to let in the migrant caravan from South America. which he knows will all be voting for the Democrats, and the Republicans will never be able to get voted in again because the electorate will have been changed. So that's one problem that a political party would face. Another problem is the attacks in the mainstream media, the slurs, the slander, the lies, the names, the nasty names that that political party would be called. They would be called white supremacist, they would be called Nazi, they would be called racist. All the things that were thrown at the British National Party. We know that these are nasty names and it shouldn't be allowed. The press should not be allowed to do this. But they've had court cases against them, maybe not in Britain, but I know they have had court cases against them in America by people who have said, well, I don't like being called a white supremacist. And all they've said is, well, look, you advocate for white people, therefore you are a white supremacist. We can call you this. So they'll be able to get away with calling us all these nasty names. We know what the mainstream media do. We can fight back in some ways now that we have our own media, now that we have the internet, and we have an alternative media. It was much easier 5 or 6 years ago, back when the internet was democratic and whatever was the most popular content rose to the top of the search listings. But ever since Donald Trump got voted into office, the internet has no longer been democratic. The algorithms that are supposed to put the most popular content to the top have been messed with so that they put the mainstream media to the top. And not just in places like YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, but also the actual main search engine listings. Google will not put anything to the top of those listings if it presents an alternative narrative to the one that we get from the mainstream media. So the internet is no longer democratic, but we do still have our alternative media, and we can get the truth out on our alternative media, but not in such a way that we could take on the mainstream media and say, well, their attacks against a political party, we can defeat them. You would also need masses of funding. You'd need millions to get a political party into power. And all the while that you were directing your resources into doing this, you wouldn't be directing them into other things. And when it failed, you would end up being completely disheartened with it all and not wanting to put any more work into it because it had been such a failure. And this happened with people that supported the BNP. They were very, very disillusioned when it fell apart. Some of them have come back to the movement now, but a lot of them have just stayed away completely because their hearts are just completely broken after putting all their work, all their money as well. I mean, just shoveling tons and tons of money into the project only to see it fail. And even if they did get into power, what would happen then once they got into power? They wouldn't really be able to make any changes. We see Donald Trump hasn't been able to make any changes because the law courts are against him. So if we got somebody into power, say here in Britain, I'm sure the law courts would then, all the left-wing progressives that are now in the law courts, they would then try to stop whatever programs and policies that the Nationalist Party was trying to make. So it's really insurmountable odds, and it's really dreaming about doing things that we can't actually affect in the here and now. And I don't want to come across here as if I'm just trying to disillusion people and bring them down. I'm just pointing out this is the situation that we are in. So we need to find other ways that we can resist what is happening to us. And I would suggest there are things that we can do and other ways that we can look at this that are going to be a far more benefit to us. If we look at this as, what is nationalism? Well, nationalism is basically the concept of the ethnic nation being an extended kinship group. It's your extended family. So nationalism is seeking to better the prospects for your extended family in whatever way that can be achieved. And there are lots of other ways that it can be achieved without getting a political party in place. You can set up community-based nationalist groups where you help one another out. You buy from one another's businesses. You help out the white homeless. You join community outreach groups, which will most likely have lots of other white people in them, because non-whites don't really want to join these sort of groups if they're multicultural. But you will find that it's a lot of white people that are the most charitable and likely to join these groups. And then perhaps you can introduce some of our less radical ideas to them. And the way that we introduce our ideas to people is very important. And Jason Kerner, No White Guilt, talks about this a lot. We have to be very careful not to fall into the traps that have been laid for us using the language of our enemies, which will end up portraying us as the bad guy. And we're not the bad guy. We know that we are the good guys, but a lot of us lack the vocabulary to explain that and explain our ideas in such a way that we come across as the good guys. I mean, the way to explain what is going on is that it is a competition. The races are all in competition with one another for limited resources on limited terrain. And when you look at the world before we had multiculturalism, you had nations competing against one another. You had races competing against one another. And at the turn of the last century, white people were in the ascendant. White people were completely unchallenged by anybody else in the rest of the world. And white people fought amongst themselves. We went to war against Germany. We had essentially a world war, which was basically a brother's war. If you have a brother's war, the family can only lose. There can only be losers when you go to war against your brother. So we lost that war, and the result of losing that war is that we now have multiculturalism, and we now have to compete against these other races that are living within our homelands. And that's what it is. It is a competition. It's not a war. It's a competition. It's just the way that the world is. There is always struggle within the world, and you need that struggle so that you can improve your skills and your talents and you can become stronger. And particularly, we need the moral struggle so that we can prove that we have virtue. And when we prove that we have virtue, we improve our characters, our spirit gets stronger, and we feel content in what we have done. We know that we have done the right thing, because that's just instilled in us. That's something that comes out from us as white people. We want to do the right thing. When we do the right thing, we are rewarded, whether that's through your hormones rewarding you, or being rewarded through a better outlook on life, being in a better mood, or whether it's through actual physical rewards that life will give you for doing the right thing. But when we do the right thing, we are rewarded. When we do the wrong thing, bad consequences will arise from that, and we end up being punished for it. We're encouraged to do the wrong thing by our competitors, of course, because that is essentially the role that they play. They tempt us to do the wrong thing. And when they succeed in doing that, that most often benefits their group at the expense of our group, such as if we're persuaded to race mix, or we're persuaded to be homosexual, or we're persuaded to abort a child, or persuaded to get divorced or have an affair, all these sorts of things. They weaken our nation. And when our nation becomes weaker, their nations become stronger. And the way that we cope with this, and the way that we can best defend ourselves from this, is to study these other races. Study them. Find out what their weaknesses are. Find out what their strengths are. Find out what their evolutionary group strategies are. And this is effectively the same as if you're running a marathon. If somebody is running a marathon, a top marathon runner, say, he is going to want to know the strategies and the tactics of his nearest competitors. He's going to want to know how he can beat his competitors. So he's going to study their strategies and their tactics. It's the same in all sports competitions. You study the other team. You study what they're going to do so that you can beat them. You can win against them. You don't say that the marathon runner hates the other competitors in the race. You don't say that the football team hates the other football team in the soccer game, because they don't. They understand that it's just a competition. And we have to understand that that's what we are in. We are in a competition with these other races. So we study their weaknesses. We study their strengths. We study the ways that they harm us. And then we can strategize and work out ways where we can best defend ourselves against that. And when we do that, we can't be accused of hate speech just for studying these other groups and the effects that they have on our culture and on our people. And when we explain it in this way, that we are studying competing groups, because we understand that we are a part of a group, we are in this competition, I don't see how that can be ever described as being an incitement to hate. If anything, it's an encouragement to learn more about the other peoples that we live alongside. Doesn't mean that you hate them. It means that you see them as a necessary part of the world today. We have to have something to struggle against. We have to have a competition. It's innate within us that we want to win. We want to win the competition. And the most successful way that these other races have had to defeat us with has been to convince us that we're not even in a competition. They've convinced most of our people that black lives matter more than our own, say, just with that slogan, black lives matter. As Dr. Slattery says, black lives actually matter. And what that means is that we are putting black lives ahead of our own lives. All lives matter. All types of people are at risk of unfortunately being killed by accident, by the police, by mistake, as it were. All races are at risk of that. But we're told that we should only be really concerned about black people. And we should be putting black people first. If we have a list of people and we're trying to select through to find the right person for the job, and there are some black people on there, we're told that we should be employing those black people at the expense of the whites, because blacks don't have enough employment. And this goes right the way through society. Judges are told that when they have a black person in their dock, if he's particularly young, if he's a teenager, then the judge is told that rather than actually jailing him, the judge should bear in mind that the black teenager may have been a victim of racism at some point in his life, and it would be better to give him some other kind of punishment that doesn't actually put him behind bars. All sounds very reasonable, doesn't it? Trying to just even things up. But what it means is that if a white teenager is in the dock for exactly the same crime, the white teenager is going to get sent to jail. So we've effectively been told that we should be putting these other races' needs above our own needs. And you can liken an analogy to that is if you are working, and instead of working to put a roof over your head and to feed your family, you work and you send all that money to another family instead of to your own family. Well, what would happen then is your own family would starve to death, wouldn't it? Because you'd be doing everything for this other group. And people may say, well, you should be doing things for other people. And we should. We should be doing things for our own people, though, not for these other groups. If we're not helping ourselves, if we are not working to advance our own people groups' interests, then who is working to advance our own people groups' interests? These other racial groupings are not going to be working to further our interests, are they? They are going to be working to further their own interests, because they understand fully well that this is a competition for resources that we're in, that the earth is limited land, limited territories, limited resources. That's why they move to the areas that are the most wealthy. That's why they move to the areas that have the most industrious people within them, so that they can then take a little bit of that wealth for themselves. They understand that. We seem to have forgotten that. And we think that it is virtuous to talk about how much we are doing for these other races at the expense of doing it for our own. That is not virtuous. That is our virtue being used against us. Now, a lot of the time, people will talk about our opponents and how they use things such as pornography and encouragement to homosexuality, encouragement for abortion, encouragement for divorce, all this immorality. Our opponents, our competitors in this, will encourage us to do these things, this immorality, because it weakens us and it preys upon our vices. But they also weaken us by using our virtues against us. And of course, our virtues are mercy, charity, and these are used against us. We will be encouraged to accept fake refugees in. We will be encouraged to accept refugees that instead of claiming asylum in France or claiming asylum in Turkey, the nearest country from to their supposedly war-torn country, we'll be encouraged to let them in to our country, and we'll be told it's all these poor children, it's all these poor women, they've got nowhere else to go, they're starving, and what mean people we would be if we don't let them in. And of course, a lot of our people will fall for that and say, oh yes, we should let these people in, there shouldn't be any borders. But of course, that is, again, that is at the expense of our own people. Our virtues of mercy and charity are there being used against us. And we shouldn't fall for the trick of thinking, well, mercy and charity are weaknesses, because they're not weaknesses. They are great virtues. When we are merciful and charitable to our own people, we succeed. When the upper classes help out the lower classes, when the rich help out the poor are very grateful for that, and they may well use that help to achieve something incredible. They may just waste that wealth, but on the other hand, they are white, they have the ability to create things, and they may achieve something really good with that that puts back into society. And we used to have this concept of noblesse oblige, where the aristocrats were expected to help out the peasants, because by the grace of God go the aristocrats. They have been blessed by God with the wealth. They are at the top. They have the highest intelligence and they are the most capable. And because they are the most capable, they are supposed to look after the least capable, particularly orphans and widows and the disabled, people that can't look after themselves. So charity in that way and mercy is a good thing. And when you've got somebody that has genuinely turned over a new leaf and they're not a bad person anymore, something else which white people can do, then we have the ability to extend mercy to them so that they don't continue to be punished in the way that they would have been if they hadn't turned over a new leaf. And these things make us stronger because it unites us together as a nation. When these virtues are extended to these other races, they weaken us as a nation. They benefit these other groups, these other competitors. They benefit our competitors and they weaken us. And they laugh at us for doing it. They think, what fools these white people are. They let us in, they make laws to prevent us from being criticized. They cover up our crimes. They pretend that we don't know any better. Come in here and let's take advantage of these dumb white people. They don't thank us for the mercy and the charity. The odd ones might thank us, but you have to look at these things as a group. This is another side of this. When we make our points to people, they will always bring up an example of a particularly good immigrant or a black or a non-white, sorry, doctor, or somebody black who's a good father. And there are good fathers that are black, and there are good non-white doctors, but that is not representative of the group as a whole. And what we're dealing with here is extended kinship groups. We're not looking at individuals and discussing and looking at things as this is an individual's behavior. We're actually looking at the entire group and saying, overall, these groups' behavior does not benefit us. Okay, we may have more variety in food. Some employers may make more money. The economy may seem to expand with more immigration. But all of that is at the expense of the people that live here, who have to queue for the hospital, who have to queue on the roads, who have to put up with a massively increasing violent crime rate in the cities that have these people in them, because they just naturally commit more crime than we do, 5 times as much crime. On average, if you look at the crime statistics, wherever we have these multicultural centres, and you look at the black crime statistics, they're about 5 times as much as they should be by their percentage in the population. So there may be some small increase in the economy, but at the expense of violent crime, hospital waiting lists, school classroom sizes, the lowering the standards of education. Because we have these people here that have a lower average IQ, they can't get by on a meritocracy, and we have to lower the standards so that they can make an appearance of getting by. And this is before we even get to the existential threat of miscegenation. When we have other races that are living alongside us, that are on our territory, mating rights come with the territory. If you have these other peoples that are living within our territory, they are going to interbreed with our women. And what does it mean when they interbreed with our women? Well, it means that that woman's descendants from then on will no longer be a part of our extended kinship group. It means that that branch on the tree, on the racial tree, will no longer have any more new buds on it. It means that that branch is dead. It's died off. It means that all that woman's ancestors will never again have descendants that think like them, look like them, and have the same abilities and talents as them. It means that we will be prevented from that line from ever increasing ever again. It means that we have been, that line has just been stopped right there. And when this happens and it grows throughout the nation, eventually it changes the whole nature of that nation, and it ceases to be who it once was. And all we have to do is look back in history and look at the ethnicity of the ancient Egyptians, look at the ethnicity of the ancient Aryans in India, look at the ethnicity of the ancient Assyrians. All of these peoples were originally white. And once they invited in non-whites into their city centres, into their empire, which they originally had them there to work, again, because we're merciful and charitable, we employed these people, we gave them work, we gave them employment, and we fed them in exchange for that. Some of them learnt how to read and were intelligent and articulate, and there were campaigns to give them citizenship. So we ended up giving them citizenship. Once they had citizenship, once they were seen as equal to the whites, the interbreeding occurred. Once the interbreeding occurred, the civilization fell. Yesterday, I was looking at the prayer of Ipuwer. It's 4,000 years old, and it's an Egyptian priest. And he is describing the fact that Egypt is now full of foreigners. The taxes are all going to pay these foreigners. Noble people are now treated as if they are peasants, and the crocodiles are fat with Egyptians committing suicide. And basically it's talking about this is the fall of the Egyptian Empire. This is what happens when you have diversity. So there is this existential threat as well. And of course, we must be very careful not to blame mixed race people for this, because it's not the mixed race people's fault. It is the white people's fault. It is our fault for giving in to the temptation, giving in to the temptation to interbreed with these other races. It's not their fault. It's not their fault they find us attractive. It's our fault that we find them attractive, because we are the ones that are in the minority. We are the ones with the recessive genes, that if we interbreed with these other races, we are the ones that lose what it is that makes us unique. They don't. The mixed race people just get absorbed back into the group that they originally came from, that the non-white parents originally came from. So we have to be careful not to blame them because of this. It's us. We are the ones that are at fault. And these are the sort of things that we need to be explaining to people and talking about to people, so that we ensure that less of it happens. We need to particularly talk about our history and the truth about our history, and the fact that we've only recently had these non-whites here in the numbers that they are in now. That happened at the end of the war with the immigration. And if we can just get the truth out, so that we can just keep that flame burning within our communities, and let the other whites in our communities that are all noticing that there is something wrong, if we can explain to them just what it is that is wrong, then they can ensure that their children don't miscegenate either. And eventually we will put a stop to this. You know, we know that by 2060, we're going to be a minority if things continue at the moment with the breeding rate and the immigration rate. And people think, well, the only way we can stop that is to have somebody in power. But there are other ways to put a stop to that. If everybody who is white knew the damage that miscegenation caused, then there would be no more miscegenation. So at least we wouldn't be losing any of our people to that. And if our people knew what was really going on, they would do their best to prevent non-whites moving into their communities. And they would move to communities that were white. And if non-whites moved there, they would find that regardless of diversity quotas, they were unable to get a job. We don't have to be mean to these people. All we have to do is start looking out for our own people, for our own extended kinship group, loving our own nation, instead of diverting that love to these other peoples. And that's the way to win. And that's the sort of thing that you can do within your own individual life and by affecting the people that are around you. If you're a good person and you affect the people around you in good ways and they know that you're a nationalist, then that is going to encourage them to also be a nationalist. If they see that you're a good person and you're not taken in by all the lies, why would they then be against you? They're not going to be against you. They're going to want to join you. And we want people to join us because that's the way that we will win. And we will win. We're guaranteed of that. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.